going to cross over to Japan, where Iran's foreign minister is speaking, Mohammad Javad Zarif. Listen up.
That is such an important ingredient of Iranian power, because we rely in Iran, first and foremost, on the people. And these people made a choice. They made a choice to engage. This choice was a rational choice. It was a choice based on a sober assessment of realities. But it was a choice not because of economic hardship, but because of a demand for respect. They chose a president or a candidate they thought could best assure respect for Iran and the Iranian people across the world. And based on this choice, we started to engage. And the international community, sometimes it's difficult for me to talk about the international community. I've got to talk about the West. Because last time I met the West, group of E3 plus 3 or P5 plus 1, I told them that you assume that you represent the international community, and I'm just coming from a meeting that I chaired consisting of 120 members of this international community, which we call the Non-Aligned Movement. And Iran happens to be the chairman of that. So whatever we call the international community, or in your terminology, international fold, I'm not interested in debating definitions. But the West engaged Iran based on a recognition, in my view, that the previous policies had not worked. And I believe it's important, it's extremely important for all of us to recognize that. We engaged for some 8 to 10 years in a process that does not belong to 21st century. We live in a different global environment. The global environment of today is much different from the global environment of the 1960s and 70s, where you could have a zero-sum approach to international relations, where you could gain influence at the expense of others, where you could progress in a world that was deprived, where you could maintain your security at the expense of insecurity of others. That world has changed. So if you engage in zero-sum approaches to international relations, everybody is bound to fail. And I believe this reality sunk in. That is, everybody understood, or came to understand, or I hope will come to understand soon, that 8 years of sanctions against Iran have produced economic hardship, have created resentment among the Iranian people that they cannot even purchase medicine using open banking channels, but has not stopped Iran's nuclear program, has in fact increased the number of centrifuges spinning in Iran by many folds. When the sanctions started, Iran only had 200 centrifuges. When we started negotiations, Iran had 19,000. So if you're a calculating person, sanctions produce 18,800 centrifuges. That is the net outcome of sanctions. And a lot of resentment in Iran that the West does not want Iran to make progress, that the West is trying to put pressure on the Iranian people not to even be able to buy medicine. And I think this realization allowed us to engage in a process based on a different approach. And the different approach was, on the one hand, Iran does not seek nuclear weapons, does not see nuclear weapons as enhancing its security, even considers the perception that Iran has a clandestine nuclear weapons program as detrimental to its security. We do it not out of being good people, which we are, but out of a very serious strategic calculation that in our immediate neighborhood, we are already the most powerful. And we need to go out of our way in order to convince our neighbors that we do not have any intentions against them. Although for 250 years, Iran has never waged a war against any of its neighbors. But nevertheless, just the power asymmetry, just the disparity in size, population, natural resources, human potential, geography, all of this creates a type of anxiety which we have had to address. Even a perception that we are seeking nuclear weapons would even further augment this anxiety. And in the wider region and globally, Iran is not able, either directly or through proxy, to engage in deterrence, in nuclear deterrence. So strategically, it doesn't make sense for Iran. Now, people want to create smoke screens behind which to justify policies. But that's nothing new. But if you think strategically, it doesn't make sense for Iran to have nuclear weapons. Historically, Iran was a victim of chemical weapons and did not respond in kind. We were the victim of larger scale use of chemical weapons by Saddam Hussein. And six United Nations investigations have proven time and again that Iran did not retaliate. In addition to this strategic and historical outlook, we have a religious and ideological prohibition of nuclear weapons. The leader of the Islamic Revolution has a religious decree, a religious edict, that nuclear weapons are prohibited under Islamic jurisprudence. So that is from our perspective. We have nothing to lose, to show to the world, and everything to gain, actually, that we don't intend to have a nuclear weapons program. But I venture to say that the West should also share an objective with us. And I hope that they have started to share that objective. And that is, you cannot wish Iran's nuclear program away. You cannot entertain illusions of a zero enrichment option. And that is because of the fact that Iran has the technology, the know-how, the scientists, workshops that produce centrifuges. So you cannot simply have the illusion that Iran, because of pressure or coercion, will simply give up. Actually, if I were sitting in Washington or anywhere else, and an Iranian official came to me and said, we want to dismantle our nuclear program, I would be suspicious. Because how to dismantle science? How to dismantle technology? If somebody told you that they're going to dismantle a capability, you should assume that they're going to make it underground. They're going to keep it, take it to a more discreet environment. So the best way for the West to ensure that Iran's nuclear program will always remain peaceful is to ensure that Iran has a transparent nuclear program, something that is on the ground so that these capabilities are exercised under international monitoring with the ability of the IAEA to examine and to verify Iran's peaceful intentions. And that is, I believe, a common objective that we can have, an Iranian nuclear program which will remain exclusively peaceful. And based on this common and shared objective, we started a process of a non-zero-sum game. That is a positive-sum game, because the zero-sum approach that we've had created a negative-sum outcome. Everybody had lost. Iran's economy had suffered. At the same time, the West did not achieve its intended ambition of the zero-sum enrichment, the zero enrichment option. So now we are approaching something on a positive sum or a win-win game. That is, Iran will have an enrichment program that will remain exclusively peaceful. Based on this, we have made a landmark agreement which many believed would never be possible. Many thought that breaking this climate of distrust was impossible. But we did it. It took a lot of political will. It took a lot of courage. But we did it. A lot of people tried to torpedo it. It seems to me that 14,000 people have poured into Washington right now in order to torpedo it. But I don't think they'll succeed, because there is no other game in town. That's the only game. That's the only reasonable game. Not only we succeeded in reaching an agreement, we succeeded in implementing that agreement. Again, against all odds. And now we are engaged in the next round, that is to reach a final agreement. A final agreement is more difficult and easier at the same time. It's easier because the ice is already broken. We have already passed that hurdle. So we can pass the next hurdle. It's more difficult because we need to deal not with a temporary solution, but with a more permanent situation. It's not something that could be achieved in one meeting. Requires a bit of work on technicalities, details. So we had basically 6 months to do it. Of course, that can be extended to another 6 months, but we hope to be able to do it within the first 6 months. We've started the process, I think, rather well. We agreed on generally on what we needed to cover. In fact, the Geneva Joint Plan of Action, which was adopted on the 24th of November, tells us what we need to cover. And I'm sure with political will and good faith,